Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. You'll find all the TWiT shows on your Roku box, Android, and BlackBerry phones, and all Yahoo Widget TVs powered by MediaFly. For more information, visit twit.tv/MediaFly. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 61, recorded September 22nd, 2010. No tweet left behind. This Week in Google is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/twig. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to twig.hover.com. Hello, everybody. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google and the Cloud. And I want to emphasize and the cloud, because sometimes Google's going to go out of business long before we ever do. So we'll have something else to talk about. Gina Trapani is here, 1 year older.
Yes, unfortunately.
None the wiser.
Hello, none the wiser.
Mazel tov, young Gina.
And loaded Thank with you. Cupcakes. Gina, of course, blogs at smarterware.org and writes for Fast Company. Fastcompany.com/worksmart is her new feature on Fast Company. It's great to have you, Gina.
Good to be here.
Gina, are you older than half my age?
I am 35.
Oh, phew.
She's not half our age, Jeff. She's a third of our age.
No offense to you, Gina, but that makes me very happy.
I'm officially middle-aged, I think. Is 35 officially
middle-aged?
You don't know middle-aged. No.
Jeff,
we'll tell you about middle-aged.
We may not be twice her age, but we're 50% older than her.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Leo.
Jeff Jarvis is here. He's actually
You're
in Amsterdam.
Same old as I am.
What are you doing in Amsterdam?
The picnic conference, which is here, which I finked out on last year because I had my prostate out, and the year before because there was a scheduling mess, so I'm here this year. And Amsterdam is a great city, so what the heck? I'm here to speak 5 times tomorrow.
Wow.
I'm going to be so sick of myself.
What fun. Is Picnic about journalism?
No, it's more kind of the European South by Southwest with
fun.
Grass.
Oh, let's go, Gina. Next year, Picnic.
I'm there.
We need more South by Southwest. Once a year is not enough for that party.
Well, it's not, you know, because we need to do that. Well, and Gina's not committed to going to South by yet.
I don't know. I'm feeling kind of maybe not. I'm not sure.
How many have you been to?
I've been every year since, I think, 2005,
so
2006.
You're bored. So
it's changed a lot. And, like, you know, the girls handing out the Red Bull, you know, just the whole vibe has kind of changed. It's become super, super commercial. So I don't know. I'm having that the hipster South by Southwest go, or like, it's jump the shark moment. So I don't know. I haven't missed it in a really long time. So
see, I'm the guy who goes to South. This is my first time last year. I'll be going to Burning Man this next time, and that I'm that guy. No, I'm that guy. I'm the guy who goes, oh, it's
are
hip.
You really going to Burning Man?
Yeah. No, I don't know. My son says we're going to Burning Man next year, and basically I'm the jump the shark guy. When Leo shows up, the conference has jumped the shark. It's over. Forget it.
If you guys are going to be there, it'll be very difficult not for me not to go.
We had such a good time this year.
We had a good time together.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
The highlight was dinner with you, Leo. The dinner that must have cost you $25,000.
Oh, that was fun. Where they came with the skewers of meat.
What did it cost?
Oh, that was amazing.
You remember?
I showed it on the live stream. I don't remember, but I showed it on the live stream. There were about 30 or 40 people. We took everybody who was in our party and then a bunch of other friends of TWiT out to... what was it called? It's got a name. It's got some...
It's a Chiaroscuria.
What was it called? Chiaroscuria kind of restaurant. But what was it called?
It had
I know. But it's on the how. And the how.
I took an Indian, a vegetarian Indian friend there the year before. He couldn't even walk in because the odor of dead meat was so extreme.
Oh, it is too meaty for me, Jeff Jarvis. But they had a wonderful salad bar because they want to fill you up on the cheap stuff.
Yeah.
So the salad, it was one of the best salad bars I've ever seen. So I think a vegetarian actually be very happy there. But if you're really a vegetarian and the guy comes around, he's got a sword loaded with meat and says, what do you want? I can see
Gina,
that.
This has to make you want to come.
It really does. It actually, you're changing my mind right now. I'm like, God, that was such a good dinner. We'll see. We shall see.
It was just fun.
It was really fun to see you guys.
Put in a panel, and he and I are on it. Basically, we're going to argue whether or not companies must be evil.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's a great topic.
What a good topic. Now,
Gina is there to be our moderator, if she will so deign as to attend.
I know. There's no way I can't go. With the opportunity to do the panel and the dinner, I mean.
Now, do you have to be voted in, Jeff? What is the process? Is there a...
Well, I was just talking about this. Yeah, I think you basically do. I put in a panel about publicness, and I haven't heard crap. Yeah. So I guess I didn't get voted in. But you know, they have some leeway, Hugh does, to put in things. Because he's producing the event. He should be able to put in things that make sense for the event.
Fogo de Chao.
That's it. That was it.
Oh, very good.
And it's a chain. There's one in San Francisco, I'm told. It is a very good restaurant. I really enjoyed it.
It was fun.
And in fact, my friend, an engineer for the radio show, Luis, who is Brazilian, just lived his whole life there, said it's actually very authentic and very good.
So I'm going to sue you when I end up in the hospital with cardiac, but it's okay.
I'll be the guy on the other gurney. What are you talking about?
You're my co-respondent.
Eric Schmidt shows up on the Colbert Report. Now, Jeff, I know you didn't see it. Gina, did you?
I did. I really enjoyed it.
Well, if you don't want to get in trouble, Leo, do you want to do a dramatic rendition of it?
Wouldn't that be funny? If I had the transcript, I would. But since I don't, let's just play it. What happens, by the way, is that YouTube has a very effective... There was a good article on... was it codinghorror.com, Gina? I think
Coding
it was.
Coding Horror, yep.
This week about this YouTube automated system that flags... It looks for a fingerprint of copyrighted content, flags it, and then the copyright holder gets to decide what happens. And we've had stuff... I had a tweet, last week's tweet pulled by NBC... Just automatic. I mean, there's no letters from a lawyer or anything. And this is a news show, so I'm of the opinion it's fair use. But nevertheless, by playing this clip, I believe that we will be flagged and perhaps pulled off YouTube for doing it. But you know what? I got to go on with the news. The news must go on. This is from.
Did you appeal? There is a structure to appeal.
Yeah,
here,
we're
right?
going to appeal, but it's, yeah, I mean, but it
just creates so much work. By the time,
what we want to do is a blanket appeal that says, look, anything on the Twitch channel, because we're a news operation, you shouldn't have that problem.
And but, trust me, I'm Leo, the nicest guy
me.
On the internet.
Would I lie? Here is this Colbert Report from last night. I'm sorry, the Colbert Rapport from last night with Stephen Colbert and Eric Schmidt.
At least that's what it said when I looked him up on Bing.
I'm inserting commentary here so that it's clearly not a reuse of this clip, but there is commentary. Oh, look, he made a joke.
Please welcome Eric Schmidt.
Now, I was told that by somebody who was on the Colbert Report that you are instructed before the show, do not try to be funny. That's... Colbert's job. Just be a straight man. Let's see how Eric does.
It's lovely to see you. I get to put another notch in my billionaire belt. Wonderful to meet you. Now, sir, you are the head of Google, which is...
I love it when I love it when moderators tell the person they're talking to something that the person... You are the head of Google. Really? Wow! It's like, okay...
Crap, I better get to work.
Yeah, what am I doing here? I thought I was out of work.
One of the biggest, most important companies in America.
Thank you.
Now, hey, I didn't do it. You guys did it. You and your algorithms.
Yes.
Right? It's an algorithm.
Yes.
That you guys make your cash by doing essentially data mining on what we Americans
I'm bored
care about,
already.
Right?
I'm sorry.
Not true? I'm going to go with my explanation.
All right.
But you do know things about Americans that we maybe when we were children didn't think people would know about us. Our likes, our dislikes are codified regionally, if not individually, correct?
I love the blank look.
It's true.
From
that
Eric?
You see your searches.
Yeah,
that
just
the
silent.
Uh-huh. And I'm supposed to trust you on that.
You not only do you have to, but it's the law in a lot of countries.
For you to forget.
Yes.
Okay.
You can remember.
Yeah. But I guess my point is...
Uh-oh.
I try not to. They're pretty disturbing. Now... By the way, why don't I get more hits when I put in tall women carrying heavy things? Can you get on that? Can you do anything about that?
Is that a site you're trying to promote?
No, just a general interest. No ads come up for that.
Well, you need to work to get more content.
Okay, fantastic.
In that area.
No, so you wouldn't call that data mining?
No, we actually don't do data
awkward.
Mining. What we do is we go.
Or data mining, either one. Data or data.
And well, I don't why is that awkward, Jeff?
It's
that was
no,
awkward.
Just in a basic party kind of way that Eric's trying not to be funny and he's always not being funny.
Right.
It's like listening to the Howard Stern guys call the dork on the phone.
Right.
Who doesn't know it's a joke.
I don't watch his show on a regular basis.
You're right. That's what Eric is told to do. That's what he's
been
supposed
told
to do.
Yeah.
He's doing the right thing.
Doesn't this happen all the time, though, Gina, where it's kind of awkward because people are trying to, they got a funny guy and they're trying to be serious? I mean, this
yeah, of course. And listen, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Colbert says, you know, you mine this data, you know, and Schmidt's like, well, we don't really do data mining. Does Google not do data mining? Would you guys say that? I mean, because data mining is like a very scary way to characterize, you know, what Google does. But wouldn't, I mean, I don't know. What is the technical definition of data mining? I would say that Google, you know,
sure, you're right,
mines data from web pages to determine, you know, search results.
Wikipedia, data mining is the process of extracting patterns from data. Well, hell yeah, they do data mining.
I mean, I realize this is not a technical show, you know what I mean? But it was interesting to see him say, well, we don't mine data. We just figure
out.
They
do data strip mining.
Yeah. Talk about data mining. They do mountaintop removal mining. So, but obviously what Schmidt is responding to is the underlying fear that people have that it's your data, that they're personally like somebody's, oh, look what he looked at.
Right.
But it is exactly what data mining means, is what Google does. Extracting patterns from data.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how he's going to justify that.
Our computers go out and they find out everything going on the web, and they figure out what points to each other, and that gives us the algorithm, which is called PageRank, and that's how we decide how to rank the results.
And this algorithm changed the way search happened.
Now, you see what he's done here. It's very clever. He's changed the subject. Well, we don't data mine when we spider.
Right.
But that's not what Colbert really is asking. He's saying, are you paying attention to what I'm searching for? Do you data mine search queries, which Google does. By the way, is Eric wearing loafers?
Oh, now I feel like we're being really mean.
Well, I'm sorry, but brown loafers in a gray suit.
I mean, to his credit, he did say Google forgets. Over time, Google forgets. And they're talking about two different kinds of data in this conversation. They're talking about, like, individuals browsing or search history,
right,
and then, like, the data on the web, the public data that's on the web.
But
you know,
there's
nothing scary about the public data on the web.
But that's what Schmidt did. He did a very clever sleight of hand, I thought. He redirected this. That was worthy of
he's clever.
That's a politician's answer. Let's watch.
Well, he's also Eric has had to learn not to try to be funny. His line about people being able to change their names at age 21, which I first heard 3 years ago, we've talked about in the show.
He was joking.
The whole audience laughed.
Right.
When he said
it
most recently, the whole audience laughed. Base hit the press. All irony lost gets translated into German. All irony lost and sledgehammer added.
Right.
And he admits that it's a bad joke in this interview.
Well, let's see. Let's see.
Yeah. At what point will Google's algorithm become self-aware and turn on its masters?
Hopefully not in our lifetimes.
Okay.
It turns out that this algorithm is pretty straightforward. It deals with really large things,
mm-hmm,
enormous numbers of information, billions and millions. It's what computers are good for. Humans aren't very good at that.
And humans aren't very good.
Humans are not very good.
Computers, that's why computers will eventually take over.
Humans are not very good at dealing with billions of things, whereas computers are.
I should scrub ahead of on this. Where does
there's one China, you know, basically there's
Hong Kong. Always going to ask about China.
Oh, I talked about China, yeah.
There's one China, you know, basically there's Hong Kong and mainland China, one country, two systems.
Yes.
We like the Hong Kong system better.
Now, you famously said, and I completely support this, the idea that someday young people, instead of having privacy for the things that they put up on Facebook, being able to expunge that, since once it's up there, it exists forever, then one day they'll just erase their histories and change their names, and they'll be scot-free.
It was a joke. It just wasn't very good.
I guess that's too hip for the room.
Wasn't a very good joke.
I was all for it. Because, I mean, I think it would be very enticing as an employer you have no history and you changed your name yesterday. Welcome aboard.
The serious goal is just remember when you post something that the computers remember forever.
Whose computers? Your computers?
Well, it's actually on the web.
That's a very good point.
Very good question.
Whose computers?
Yeah. And we went kind of both ways. Like, at first he said, well, Google's computers forget after a certain amount of time because that's a law. And then he says, but don't put anything online that you don't want kept forever because computers across the internet will remember it.
Well, and this is, and I think Schmidt has intentionally confused people. There's two kinds of data. There's the what's on the web data, the scrubbing data, and there's the search history data. People's privacy issues are all about search data. But when you post something on a website, Google saves that. Just go to Google's history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's public information that someone has published.
There's no reason not to save it. You published it.
Exactly. Right.
So, but I think...
Well, there's a copyright question still not settled about caching.
Right. In fact, I know...
Even about scraping a whole site to analyze it, and though you don't serve it up, keeping it on your servers.
Right.
I think that should be allowed, but there is a copyright fight that's going to come at some point.
Well, and then there's people like Brewster Kahle at the archive.org who are saving terabytes of data a day. God bless them, because that's our history and nobody else is saving it. But if you're a teenager and the picture of you smoking pot is in that archive, well, I guess...
didn't have any in Amsterdam. I didn't have any. I swear to you, I haven't had any pot here.
All you have to do is walk down the street and inhale. More Google.
It's all out there on the web.
Where are the computers?
They're all over the world. And if it's really juicy, there'll be copies everywhere.
Great. That was a bad thing to say. The PR people are going, oh, he did it again. Eric just loves... See, he was trying to make a joke, right? But that was exactly what you don't... If you're Google PR.
He was
PR.
Trying to be smart.
He was being smart.
So, is there anything that you don't want people to know about you?
Well, everybody has privacy, and privacy is pretty important.
My life's an open book.
Well, we actually think privacy is pretty important. We're actually making it possible for you to know what kind of stuff we have on you and actually delete a whole bunch.
Talking point.
Your company, your motto is...
don't be evil.
Don't be evil. Right now, your stock price is $513 a share. How low will that have to go before you say, that's it, we're going with evil? You'd never be evil?
Not even
a little bit?
No, we were not evil when we had no stock price at all.
All men are sinners?
It's a company.
Companies are legally people. Welcome to America.
Okay.
I love how Colbert injects actual serious content into a comedy show. Because those are actually legitimate points.
Absolutely. At that point, if I was Schmidt, I would have been like, okay.
Hold on.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Gina.
Gina first, then you, Jeff.
Yeah, I was going to say, in that point of the conversation, if I was Schmidt, I would have just kind of put up my hands, laughed along with the audience, and let the interview end. I mean, you know, it was funny, but, you know, you can't, there's no way to come back from that.
It's when did you stop beating your wife?
Right.
No, we're not evil. No, we're not. You can't win. No, really, we're not evil. Really. You don't even want the word you're evil associated with your name. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, that was smart of Schmidt to go ahead and finish it for him. I know what you're going to say.
Right.
We're not evil. But it just makes you, and God bless the PR people. They got to do what they got to do. I'm not against them on this. But you really wish you could instead be a webcam at dinner with Colbert and Schmidt. Because the matching of those two brains would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I think we saw a little bit. I'm not going to run anymore because...
We see little bits, yeah.
I've already probably done enough damage to this show.
There goes the YouTube clip, kids. Get it from iTunes.
You have to watch it on iTunes. So basically, to summarize, and Publius has done this for me in the chat room, we don't data mine. We're not evil. We don't store data, but the web does. I think these are what the PR people sent him in with. Those are the cards that that Google would like to say. What's the point of having Eric Schmidt on Colbert? Jeff, is there any reason to put him on?
Interesting question. I mean, I'm over in Europe again, and I'm watching the Germans go berserko again. And Google got called before a government commission here about Street View again. Supposedly, hundreds of thousands of people have demanded their buildings be pixelated. It's wacky over here. So what's Google's problem in the U.S.? He's got a huge problem around the world, especially in Europe, especially in Germany. I don't know what their PR problem really is in the U.S. It's Verizon.
I think there's no upside to Eric being on Colbert. I'm really surprised he did it.
Really? I don't know. I would say that it's, Colbert's a younger audience. They heard that quote, that quote about changing your name made the rounds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Larry and Sergey have this kind of image of being sort of young nerds, but
that's
Eric
who you put
that.
On. Why put Eric on? Put Larry and Sergey on.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, because they can't do this. Yeah.
They can't?
Oh, yeah. No, Eric does have a sense of irony and humor. In his own geeky way.
Right.
But I think that Larry and Sergey are just too serious in their way and couldn't ever deal with Colbert. So if Google is going to put anybody up there in front to be able to deal with this kind of humor situation, Eric does have a sense of humor. He's in a gray suit with brown pants. Brown shoes. Yes. He looks like the geek.
Baltimorean said he should have worn an ice cream suit, ice cream uniform. I would have laughed at that.
Well, you wonder whether that was the condition of the interview that they not show that.
Yeah, better to do Colbert than Jon Stewart than The Daily Show. I think The Daily Show is be a better. It's I think it's hard to look good with Colbert.
Yeah,
I mean, do you think Eric should go on with Howard?
Write off everything on Colbert to a joke.
Right.
Everything on Colbert at some level is a joke. Whereas Stewart, that's not necessarily the case. Stewart could sit down and start lecturing you.
That's true.
As he did CNN.
And he would probably. Yep. That's true.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice. And you asked the most important question. Why does Google PR think that this needs to be done in the U.S.? What is the thing that they are fighting? And Gina, would you say that young people, the people who watch the Colbert Report, are concerned about Google?
I mean, I think that he needed to come out and say that thing that I said about changing your name, it was a joke. It was a bad joke. I think that was probably worth doing the interview. I think so.
Right.
I mean, Jeff had said that, so I knew that. But I think that line really got repeated. And I think that, that young people that would watch the Colbert Report were aware of that. So
mission accomplished.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think it was worth it just for that. I think so.
We're going to move on. More stories.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead, Jeff. Yep.
The issue that Google has now about not being cool enough for employees, is it even a hiring issue to make Google cool again?
Maybe. Maybe that's what's going on. I think there are other ways they could have done that. All they really have to do is hold some rock concerts on campus. Things like that. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more. There's lots more to talk about. Froyo on the Droid X, a new Gmail client for Android phones, some new Google services, and a new way to find Google services. We're all coming up in just a second. Before we go on, though, I do want to talk about our friends at Squarespace.com. If the time has come for you to build your own website, Squarespace is the place you need to know about. Squarespace is amazing. I am a huge Squarespace fan. We use Squarespace for our Inside Twit blog, inside.twit.tv. I'm moving the radio show to it. Squarespace is both hosting and software. So it is a content management system, but you run it on their servers, and there's a real advantage to doing that. You don't have to worry about security updates. They're done for you automatically. You don't have to worry about running out of bandwidth. Squarespace can survive any attack. We've never seen it be dug or slash-dotted or twitted to death. Squarespace really has some great technology behind their servers. Templates that aren't templated. Every Squarespace site looks unique, is an expression of the site's creator, and you don't need a designer if you're doing Squarespace. You'll start with a really great template, and you could do like my friend Kevin Rose at Dig does, which is use a very simple, basic theme. That's what he was looking for. Very clean or simple, or you can go, have something a little bit fancier like Jeff Cannata from the Totally Rad Show. There's even, if you know CSS and JavaScript, there's nothing you can't do. Here's the Miles Davis fan site and blog. This is just beautiful, beautiful site. Using the Squarespace gallery technology, the commenting engine. I got to tell you, it is just really a great platform for your blog, your website. If you're a photographer, go to squarespace.com/twig right now. You can try it for 2 weeks absolutely free. You don't even need a credit card. And if you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIG and you'll get 10% off. 10% off, not just for 1 month or two, but for the life of the site. Squarespace sites start at $13.33 a month. But even a gigantic, enormous, massive business site can cost as little as $32 a year. I mean, really, really, I mean a month, I'm sorry, for a two-year commitment. Really great stuff. Import and export from all the major blog engines. You give it a try, won't you? Squarespace.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. I was up late last night because my Froyo came in on my Droid X. This is, I have to say, and you know, it runs great, it's fast and everything, and I've been using Froyo for a while on the Nexus One, but it really underscores, as little as Motorola has done to customize this, it's really a shame that the carriers and the manufacturers do modify the basic Android operating system, because in almost every case, they don't improve it. You could make the case that some of HTC's widgets are pretty nice, but I don't think they improve it necessarily.
You know, I'm out of town, so I don't know if you talked about this on Twitter, but the Samsung tablet device.
Yeah.
The fact that evidently it is not allowed to talk to a phone headset or anything in the U.S. and U.S. only. Is that evil?
Well, they're carriers, you know. You make a deal with the carriers. It's going to be expensive if you don't get it subsidized. So everybody's going to want to get the 3G version subsidized from Verizon, Sprint.
But then you can't use it as a phone.
You can't even use Skype. You can't even use
Google. Really?
Well, I don't know. How are you going to use it if you can't put a headset on?
Well, that's true. Right. Exactly.
You can't use Google Voice.
And there's questions about whether you can even get a Wi-Fi only version of the thing.
Right.
Carriers are so evil.
So, I mean, and you know, MG Siegler in TechCrunch, we're going to have him on in a couple of weeks, but and we'll ask him at that time. Wrote a post. He's it's interesting because Mike Arrington over at TechCrunch is very much of a Android fan. In fact, he's a Nexus One user. Wrote a post this week saying, "God, I tried the iPhone. What a piece of crap! I can't make a call. You know, I just can't make a call. It's worthless." And MG Siegler is saying, Android, how horrible. It's not even close. And so it's really interesting to watch. But one of the points MG makes is, how can you call it open when, in fact, because it's open source and anybody can use it, all we ever get is these closed, limited versions, you know?
Yeah, that was a good post.
So open needs enforcement. That's a net neutrality kind of argument.
Well, I don't know, Gina. I mean, if you open source something, you're saying to people, do something with it. Do what you want with it, right? That's what choice means.
Yep. Yeah, it is. You know, MG's post was interesting. It gave me pause. And I mean, his point was basically like, in practice, openness is not necessarily open.
Right.
I mean, so what can Google do? Can Google put as a part of their Android license, you know, what carriers can and can't do with the operating system? I'm curious, on your Droid X, Leo, how is Froyo different than on the Nexus One? Have you noticed that there are certain parts of the operating system?
Yeah, a lot of it's different. For instance, I love the Froyo bar at the bottom where you have the browser and stuff. Motorola modifies it, so it's the same as the 2.1 bar, the modified blur bar that Motorola offers. So you don't get that as an event.
Idiot made that decision?
That's stupid, isn't it? Because that's an improvement that Google made and they basically turned off. So
as they listen to people saying they love that change,
it baffles me. Now I have two things to say. One is Cyanogen.
Yeah.
Because it's open. Now, admittedly, you have to be a geek to take advantage of this, but because it's open, you have alternative ROMs, which you can put on your system. So you really do have choice if you know if you're a sophisticated user.
But then someone could argue that the iPhone is just as open as you can jailbreak
too. Yeah.
You know, once you get into that argument, everything is open.
Well,
you know,
you can jailbreak it, but you can't modify the OS. I mean,
true.
We have access to the OS source code, so we can modify it. Also, I'm not running the stock, and I think this is somewhat because it's open. I don't run the stock Motorola Blur. I put Launcher Pro on there, which was a pick a few weeks back, which is an alternative launcher, which I like better than Froyo, and it works fine, and I get all the advantages of Froyo, and mine is kind of the Motorola Blur stuff that I don't like. Actually, I get the best of both worlds, because I can use there are Blur widgets that I like, I guess. I could use them if I want. There's some features in Blur I really like. Can you do this, Gina? Can you highlight a widget? Let me see if I can do this. Maybe it's not going to work on that one. Highlight a widget and then resize it on your standard Nexus One.
No, I'm trying it with Pandora. No, all I can do is trash it. I can't. Right. I can't resize it.
So I can
tap and hold, and
it's like a window, and I can drag it and make it different sizes. So I can fill up as much of the screen as I want with this widget.
That might be a per widget thing. What widget is that?
Well, this is a Launcher Pro widget, but it doesn't seem to be per widget, because I could do it with the Audible widget as well.
Can you do it with Pandora?
Let me see here.
I have that one as well.
In a truly open source world, that just means something that the community could then choose to implement.
I can do it with Pandora. So now, of course, depending on the widget, I don't know if it'll have, if it'll use that space intelligently.
Right, right.
But that, I'm pretty sure, is a Motorola feature. I think that's something.
It looks that way, yeah.
It comes with the Blur. It doesn't come with Launcher Pro. It doesn't come with Froyo. It comes with Motorola. So that might be an improvement. There's a couple of bad things that happen. One is you get a lot of phones that, like this Galaxy tablet, are crippled in some way. The other issue is there's no standard look or feel, so your users are confused a little bit. Even with Windows, with as much choice as you had with Windows, when you get a Windows machine, you know how to use it.
It had the start button.
And it's going to get worse with tablets, because things aren't going to work with various sizes, 5-inch, 7-inch, 10-inch, God knows.
Right.
Let me ask you both, though, in an open source ethic, when Motorola does that neat change to change the size of the widget, shouldn't that be part of the general code base?
Maybe in the ethic, but not in the requirements, because Google used correct me if I'm wrong, Gina, but they used the GPL for the kernel and I think for Dalvik, but they used the Apache license for other stuff, which means it doesn't have that viral thing that's in the GPL, which says if you create something with our code, you have to use the same license for the thing that you create. Which is a controversial, but I think critical feature of the GPL. I think it's very important. It's what made open source work, is that you couldn't just use somebody's open source creation, modify it, and then keep it closed. But the Apache license they're using lets you do that.
The Apache license is more liberal. The GNU GPL says that if you distribute modified code, you have to make that code. You have to contribute it back or make that code available.
Right.
But the Apache license is more liberal. It says you can distribute without necessarily giving it back. And there's so many layers to Android. There's the front end. There's the kernel. So it really depends. I mean, even for something that's just themable, is a theme, is it necessarily protected under the same license? So I'm actually not sure what the layers are, what the licenses are for the different layers in Android. But if you're right, Leo, it sounds like the carriers can make these changes without necessarily giving them, getting back into the Android core. And even if they do send them back to Google, Google doesn't have to accept them.
Yeah, it's my sense that that's exactly why Google chose the Apache license and Blur. And the HTC Sense and the Samsung modifications, those are all examples of non-open source modifications. But maybe the other reason Google did it is because, remember, CyanogenMod got in trouble because there are some Google apps on top of this that are not open.
Well, related to that, Gmail is one of those apps. So Gmail is a closed source app that's distributed by Google, separate from Android. And what was happening is that anytime you got a new release of Android, you would get the new update to Gmail. So they just decoupled Gmail from Android this week. So if you want, there's a new version of the Gmail app for Android, which in my opinion is one of the number one reason to use Android if you're a Gmail user, because the Gmail experience on Android is unparalleled. But now it's in the market. So you download the Gmail app separately from Android. And the new Gmail updates are minor, but they're really awesome. There's preliminary support for Priority Inbox, right? So if you have Priority Inbox in your Gmail, there's now an important label. Yes, and you can actually, you can even add a shortcut to that, to any Gmail label, but you can add the shortcut to the important label on your home screen, right?
Awesome.
So you can just tap on it, important.
Awesome.
It also, the scroll, you can hide show quoted text the same way you can do in the web client. If you open up a thread and you scroll, it affixes header information at the top. It just, the experience, the reply button is top and center and a lot more prominent, so it's easy to reply. It's just it's a great update. So if you haven't updated Android on your or Gmail on your Android phone, grab it in the market.
Must have. It just really is great. And you know, did they make a big deal about it? Because I didn't. You know, I just noticed there was a new Gmail app. I didn't see some, oh, get it, until I started people seeing tweets about it and so forth.
Yeah, they did a post about it, I think, on the mobile blog, just saying, hey, we decoupled it from Android, so you don't have to wait for a new Android release for Gmail. Get it in the market. Here's the QR code. They didn't make too much of a big deal about it, but I was thrilled.
Well,
I mean, especially the priority inbox stuff is just worth it.
Yeah. So how can I can make the icon, you're saying the icon on the desktop, which right now goes to the whatever I've picked
that goes
the last
to
time.
Inbox. If you just tap and hold the home screen and add a shortcut.
Oh, okay. I can choose what that it's.
Yeah. So just tap and hold the free area.
Okay.
And then go to shortcuts.
Okay.
And then
it'll be a
Gmail.
Okay, we're gonna scroll down. Gmail label. There you go.
Gmail label. Yeah.
And say
and then,
use the important label. Okay. I'm gonna say it's this account.
Yeah. And then choose the important label. Exactly. And you can rename it something, and then hit done.
This is great. They also changed.
I had a funny moment in my class this week where I was extolling the wonders of Gmail's priority, and half of my class hates it.
Huh?
And it turns out those who are organized don't like it.
Oh, because you're already doing it.
Right.
It's so funny that you say that because I was this week I was realizing how much email I just wasn't paying attention to at all because it wasn't priority. Like before I'd empty my inbox all the time and now I just empty my priority inbox, but stuff was getting, you know, people were sending me stuff through my kind of cold call emails that I wasn't paying attention to because they're not marked as important.
I love it. Well, I'm disorganized too and I love it.
Yeah.
Isn't that
it's created a neat split in the world.
Yeah.
Where Google was solving a problem for only some proportion of mankind.
Right. But that makes sense. It gives you a choice. If you're disorganized, we'll do it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll fix it. And it does a good job as you have to train it a little bit.
You do.
But
it
does a very good job. So all three of us
are really depressed. I hit one point this week where my important thread went more than one page.
Yeah,
and I said,
that's
oh
bad.
No, Jarvis, here you go.
That, you know, that is my breaking point. When my Gmail conversations go off the first page, that's when I'm like, okay, I really need to stop and deal with this. It's weird. It's this 50. You know, I had one of my developers who I communicate with on the mailing list all the time emailed me individually, and I hadn't responded. And he IM'd me like, was I a victim of your priority inbox? Am I not? Did you get my mail? Is it in your inbox? Is it important? So that was fun.
Let's see here. Let me think.
You got Arrington.
Yeah, I want to take a break and then we're going to come back and I want to get your opinions on what's going on with Mike Arrington. I'll tell you one thing.
That's a show.
There's a show. One thing, and it happens every week, but one thing
is
very clear.
We
should do this week in Mike Arrington, Twimma. The one thing is very clear that Mike really knows how to stir the pot. And of course, if you're a blogger, that's probably your primary skill.
It's an important skill.
On the one hand, he's being applauded by people who say, you know, this is the future of journalism. Mike is a real honest, dyed-in-the-wool journalist. On the other hand, he's being decried as a sensationalist. We will let you be the judge in just a bit. Before we do that, though, I would like to talk a little bit about our fine sponsor, Hover.com. If you're doing domain registration, I want to point you to Hover.com. These are some nice guys. In fact, Elliot from Two Cows, who runs Two Cows and who runs this company, came up to me at South by Southwest and said, hey, I really applaud your stand on GoDaddy. I've been kind of critical of GoDaddy for a lot of reasons. One, because of their silly sexist ads, which really bug the heck out of me. But more importantly, because You, boy, try to register a domain there. It's 80 clicks before you can check out. You got to. They sell so many other. No wonder they make $800 million a year. They sell so much other stuff. So he said, you know, we've got something called Hover.com. We just updated Domains Direct, which has been around for a long time. I used it years ago. And he said, I want you to just take a look at it. We've decided to really simplify the domain registration process to make it clean, simple, and effective.
This is a good business model.
I love it. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's just kind of responding to the clutter. There are always going to be people who say, hey, we're going to make more money by upselling you, by cluttering. And you know what? If it doesn't bother you, go ahead and use it. But see, I go to hover.com. It is as simple as can be. They have the domain name search that you look for, and they do all of the TLDs that you'd expect, including some oddball ones like me.uk and .tel and .bz and, of course, TV and CA and US and so forth. But then it's simple. You say, yes, I'll take that. you click it, and you're done. No upsell. In fact, if you use Twig, if you go to twig.hover.com, you'll save 10% right now on the domain registration. They don't do hosting, but they do domain forwarding with no email, starting at $15 a year. If you want them to do email hosting, they do that. And I think this is a great solution for somebody who says, I don't need a website maybe, but I would like to have my name as my email and use forwarding so that I don't have to change my email address anytime I change email providers. This is a great way to do it. Register your name. Register your kid's name when they're born. So they have their own email address, their own site. If they want to attach a site to it, of course they can. Meanwhile, let Hover manage the email forwarding. Twig.hover.com. Clean, simple. And I really like their no-hold policy for calls that come in during business hours Monday through Friday. They promise to get you right to a service rep and won't put you on hold. Twig.hover.com. Give it a try. They're really great people with a great service, very affordable, and 10% off when you use twig.hover.com. We thank them for their support.
I'm excited we have a non-evil domain registrar that's sponsoring the show and also that I can recommend. I also am on a crusade against GoDaddy, and people always ask me, so where should we switch to?
Right,
so
right.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah, this is one to use. Yeah. You, it's just, you know, I use GoDaddy. And in fact, I think I've been moving all my stuff off to Hover, and I think I still have one or two domains still on GoDaddy because, frankly, they make it very hard.
They do make it hard.
I could go on and on, but I won't. Hover, GoDaddy. GoDaddy does not want you to move, and they keep changing my password. They just do all sorts of sneaky.
It's like trying to cancel an AOL account back in the day.
Yeah.
Speaking of names, have you guys seen about.me, which kind of lands squarely in the Google profiles arena?
No, what is it?
It's a personal page, and they're beautiful. It's like a Google profile, except it's really beautiful looking. It's got a really nice design. So we go to about.me. You can reserve your name, so it's this kind of, you know, gold rush for people's names to get their names. It's not open right now. I signed up and said, hey, you know, give me my name. Here's my email address. And I actually literally just before the show started, I got my, you know, come set up your page. So I haven't set it up yet.
Somebody's already got Leo. All right.
Yeah, try Leo. Sorry, I should have told you this before we went on the air.
Somebody's already got Twit. Okay.
Oh, no.
Arrington has a good-looking page there.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really beautiful...
Somebody's already got Leo Laporte. Okay. I guess they all registered. No. This is, you know, that's fine. You know, this is kind of... I saw this as a trend a few months ago where people are putting, like, their business card basically as a web page.
Right. If flavors.me is a similar service. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. About.me happens to be a fantastic domain, but it's interesting that it kind of during this time of Google me and the profiles bit. I mean, I think people really just want the definitive page that describes them. And Google Profiles does a good job of that, but it's not that pretty. It's got that kind of Google UI look about it. And some of these are just really, really nice for designy types.
They gave Ryan Block and Peter Rojas and Veronica Belmont a page. They gave
page. They got a lot of the A-list to try it out.
Howard Lindzen has a page. Well, I guess I won't be going there. Well, I can't get my name.
Wait, so Leah Laporte is already taken?
Yeah. But this is a Chris, it looks like Chris Sacca is the number one person. It's probably a Chris Sacca site. Here's Veronica's site. So this is cool. So you put a picture, you put what your Twitter is, you put your bio. It's not a, that's it. It's one page.
Yep. And I believe it does some social media, it connects your social media accounts and it does some analytics there, which I, like I said, I haven't set mine up yet. So I haven't seen that. But on the front page, you can see there are some graphs. And obviously I'm interested in this because of ThinkUp. So I don't know, I'll try it out this
are
week.
Are you going to be Gina Trapani? Gina, what are you going to be?
Yeah, I'm going to be Gina Trapani. I'll just be my full name.
Why not be Gina? Or what's the argument pro and con on Leo Laporte or Gina versus Gina Trapani or Jeff versus Jeff Jarvis?
For me, first of all, I can't get Gina, not with like Gina Gershon. It's just too short a name. It's too common and too short. And I mean, if I had to do it all over again, I may have used my middle name to be sort of even more specific because there are just other people with my first and last name. But back in the day when I started using first last name, I just hadn't thought about it.
Danette. Bernadette?
Marie.
Of course it's Marie. A nice Italian name.
Of course, a nice Italian
name. Maria. Oh, of that's Marie, yeah. I don't know. I always think I use Leo Laporte just everywhere. Leo seems...
Yeah, I mean, that's your brand, Leo, you know?
I'm not Elvis, for crying out loud.
Well, you have gotten to a point where I say Leo. When I talk about you, I just say Leo.
I'm not even Dion. Well, I mean, there aren't any other Leos, I don't think, in the tech.
Well, you remember last week I got in trouble for saying Uncle Leo, and he thought it was him.
Oh, that's right. But that was the Seinfeld Leo. I don't think he counts. wait a minute. Let me see if Uncle Leo's taken. Now that I could live with.
I'm sure you could talk to the About Me folks and get Leo Laporte.
I think this is an interesting, it was a hipster trend for a while, and mostly web designers who would create this wonderful, beautiful, you know, like business card page. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people just use, and you could do this at Hover, by the way, GinaTrapani.me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or .name, I think.
.name, yep.
Yeah. That's pretty.
But if Google doesn't point to those pages, then they'd...
Well, that's why the profile, ultimately, doesn't it have the inside track on all this?
Yeah, I think so.
We'll see, though, if they ever take advantage of it. I can't get Uncle Leo.
No.
Anyway, I didn't mean to derail the conversation. I had just been thinking about it.
No, it's a good conversation. So Mike Arrington, a blogger, walks into a bar. actually, is actually kind of the title of his... A blogger walks into a bar, is his TechCrunch post. Mike Arrington, again, see, showing, he's just brilliant in terms of driving traffic. Mike hears about, he was tipped off, he says, and Mike's a storyteller, so some of this may be, you know, dramatization. Yesterday, I was tipped off about a, quote, secret meeting, end quote, between a group of, quote, super angels, end quote, being held at Bin 38, a restaurant and bar in San Francisco. I was told, do not come. You will not be welcome. So I did what any self-respecting blogger would do. I like it that Mike said blogger. For some reason, that kind of like validates it, right? I drove over to Bit 38, parked my car, and walked in. And you got to commend him for doing that. Right. Thumbed his nose. At the back of the restaurant, a private room was... By the way, I think that's right there. That's distinctive, good... I don't know. Is it journalism, Jeff? What do you call that?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. But that's the thing is that as you talked about this, Leo, before, I was thinking that there are the accidental journalists. Arrington never intended to become a journalist.
No, he's a lawyer.
Who wrote about this stuff because it was going to help his VC fund.
Right.
Henry Blodgett, an analyst who went through hell and comes back out and is a journalist. I hesitate to throw Mark Cuban in there, but he's investing in things that are quasi-journalism. I like that. These are people who believe in journalism, who believe in finding stories and telling the truth to people. That's friggin' journalism, and that's what Arrington does in this case. Now, one could say that he was off in the conclusions that he drew, but in process journalism, which he and I talk about each in our own way a lot, that's part of the story. Hey, these guys were out at dinner. What do you think happened? You think they were doing no-no? You think there was okay? You tell me what you think. But it's worth asking you, isn't it? And that's what it is. That's a new kind of journalism.
He said, in the back of the restaurant was a private room with a long oval table. Sitting around the table, Godfather style. Or Last Supper style. I mean, it could have been. Were 10 or so of the highest profile angel investors in Silicon Valley. These investors, known as super angels because they've mostly moved on to launch small venture funds of their own, are all friends of mine. I knew each person in the room very well. Very, very well, he says. I certainly didn't think anything was amiss. I expected a friendly hello and an invitation to sit down for a drink or two before being shooed off while they talked about whatever they thought should be kept off record. Instead, it went something like this. Me, hey, person who was talking. Oh no. Me, hi, I heard you guys were here. I wanted to stop by and say hi. Them, dead silence. Me, so them, deafening silence. Me, this is usually where you guys say, sit down, have a drink. Them, not one sound. Me, this is awkward. I guess I'll be leaving now. He says, I've never seen... Now, this is where... Okay, so far, so good. And this is where it goes downhill. I've never seen a more guilty-looking group of people. He says, lively conversations often die quickly when I arrive. I've learned not to take it personally. Well, I don't know if that's the case, but I did sniff around a little after. I think he takes it very personally, but I did sniff around a little afterwards, and I've spoken to three people who were at that meeting, and this is where things got interesting. He says... These guys were colluding. They decided they wanted to counteract Paul Graham's Y Combinator because of its growing power. They were complaining about rising deal valuations and deciding to act as a group to reduce those valuations.
Would be a definition of collusion.
That's collusion and illegal.
The clearest definition.
I don't know. Yes. Is it illegal? It would be illegal if companies...
Isn't that price fixing?
Well, but is there a price? This isn't a price. This is how much we're going to invest. I don't know. Is it?
Well, no, but
it's more. It's morally wrong. I'll grant you, it's morally wrong. I don't know if it's legal. I don't know if it's a legal issue.
Well, but the weird thing is price fixing usually happens on the sell side.
Right.
This becomes These are price buyers. Fixing on the buy side.
You and I can collude not to pay more than a certain price for a product. In fact, if I can get everybody in the country to say, we will never pay more than $5 a year for domain registration, is that illegal? No. That's called consumer action.
Yeah, but investors and consumers.
Well, I admit that certainly it's ethically challenged. Whether it's illegal is the question. How the group
it's
can
fascinating.
It is fascinating. Yeah, and how the group can act together to keep traditional venture capitalists out of deals entirely. You know who it harms is the startup trying to get money. Apparently, there's a wiki. He says one source says there's a wiki that the group, which the group explicitly talks about how they should act to keep valuations down.
Oh, is that stupid?
If there's a wiki, that's a mistake. Now, Dave McClure, who was one of the guys there, said this is bogus. We weren't talking about anything like that. We're drinking and having fun. We just didn't want Mike to be there. He says, Mike, you don't get invited to everything. I don't get invited to everything. That's just the way it is in life. The other hand,
Mike's
Henry
right.
Blodgett.
These guys now have enough power.
Right. Well, they could be.
You've got to be careful.
They could be colluding. Henry Blodgett.
I sat in meetings in the newspaper industry where they made sure there was a lawyer in the room before so much as the wine was ordered. My father walked out of a price fixing meeting back in his day. One of my things I'm very proud of him for. That's part of the issue of the newspaper industry with this idea of everybody going behind a paywall. That is collusion. And the newspaper industry is going to the feds trying to get antitrust exemptions so they can just talk. So these guys hold a power in a market and they may think they're innocent. But and they may well be, and the intent may not have been there, but Aronson, one way or another, raised a really important issue.
Good. So we're
Fred Wilson on his post saying, I don't think anything bad happened, but boy, I'm glad he did it.
Now, Fred is a VC who might be somebody who would be harmed by this.
Yes. Because Fred's a VC rather than an angel, though right. VCs are more and more and more becoming angels. Right. Fred is investing at the level that he wants the system to be. He never would. Putting in much smaller stakes in much smaller companies because that's the new reality. So VCs are now competing with angels. Angels can glom together because they do in the VC's world stupid stuff. and now they can hold a sway. And you see, so you've got the seed accelerators like Y Combinator, BetaWorks, Seed Camp versus the angels versus the VCs.
Mike, at the end of the post says, and he's a lawyer, so I'll defer to him. He says, it's absolutely unlawful for competitors to act together to keep other competitors out of the market or to discuss ways to keep prices under control, and that appears to be exactly what this group is doing.
That's a little strong.
Well, that appears to be.
Unless he has the...
Well, he doesn't know. I mean, he has sources. He says... on a side note, this is a difficult post to write because I call nearly every person in that room a friend, but these actions are so completely inappropriate, it has to be called out. He says, included just about every
major... I salute Michael.
Yeah.
I salute him because he's raising an issue. And fine, if nothing had happened, these guys are not going to go out and have drinks together in an organized fashion again. And they're going to be cautious about this now. And that's the role of a journalist, is to be a watchdog and to say, we are watching you. And I'm fascinated that nothing is secret or private. These people could get together. Somebody smelled a rat, and they called the rat keeper, Arrington.
I have
Michael,
to say,
no offense, I didn't mean
if you're going to do it, though, don't have it in a public place. Have it at somebody's house. God knows their houses are big enough to host a party. Then you don't have to worry about Mike pulling up.
They're all too cheap.
Maybe they're too cheap. Ken Shepherdson, our VP engineering, says this is just one ad for Bin 38. It's just a where great deals get made.
It's like that movie. What's his name in the movie that's just out? That all turns out to be a big fraud.
What?
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix, was it? No.
Oh yeah, that was wild.
Yeah.
That whole thing that he did on Letterman with the beard and he was like stoned out. That was all an act, and it was for a movie. There was a weird fake documentary about a guy who is weird. Man, that's commitment to your art. Be willing to have the entire world think that you are a drugged out nutcase for your art.
So,
that's
Gina,
like Mike.
Do you think that Arrington was right or wrong in this?
I'm not sure.
If it were somebody besides Mike, let's say it. If it were anybody but Mike, we'd all go, yeah, that was great. That was the right thing to do.
I think that's a very good read on the situation. Yeah, I'm hesitating to say that I think he did the right thing because Arrington is, you know, he's funny. He likes to stir the pot. He's big drama. He stirs the pot, exactly. So yes, I agree with Jeff, but I don't trust Arrington fully. That's why I'm hesitating. Sorry, Mike.
Right. So what you're saying, Leo, I think, is that Arrington went with this in a journalistic sense prematurely. The New York Times would have verified more ill-doing before having said it.
But
in Arrington's view of process journalism, he throws it out.
Well, and that, of course, we know that. Mike, and this is the only problem I have really with TechCrunch all along, is that he will get a source and he'll go with it. And he's even said, and I'll correct it later if it's wrong. And that's why I underlined right at the beginning that he said as a blogger. He didn't say as a journalist, as a reporter, as an investigative reporter. He said as a blogger. And I think even he is consciously saying, explicitly saying, that I'm going to throw these accusations out, even if they're unfounded, unsupported, even if they don't stand up to a test that a journalistic entity like the New York Times would insist upon. I, as a blogger, I'm going to throw these out. And that's what, to me, is the most interesting about this. I think we could acknowledge if it were anybody but Mike, if it's you know, Ryan Block who wrote this article. Well, first of all, I don't think anybody besides Mike would jump to this collusion thing.
Well, anyone with a history of being a little more measured, I think we would take this a little more seriously. Well, this is what we're saying, right? I mean, yeah, and that's and Mike's, you know, I'll clean up the mess later. I'll put it out there and clean up the mess later. That's his MO.
Right.
And that's fine. That's one way to do it, but it just means that people aren't going to take you as seriously.
Right. Yes, exactly. So he's never been, secretive about that. He says that's what I do.
Yeah.
And Mike,
yeah.
This is the price you pay, is that people go, well, Mike's saying it.
Exactly.
But when I went to work for a big media company, I was trained in the sensitivities of the company to, number one, union stuff, and number two, antitrust, because it had been burned before.
Right.
And that kind of meeting would never happen in the newspaper industry. And if it did, and I'll say, well, should I take it back? It would happen. But if it did, certain people would run away from it knowing that there was trouble to be had.
Yeah,
I think it did happen in relation to paywalls. But I think certain people in the industry would say, I'm not getting anywhere near that because it's trouble. So at one, Aaron, I think, went too far in how he expressed it. He could have expressed everything he said as a question.
Yeah, what if?
Gee, why would these people get together?
Right. Well, he says he has sources who were at the thing. Dave McClure is at the thing, said, this is bogus. We got together to shoot the breeze. And, you know, it's he said, she said. But so, but, and I, and, you know, we're not.
Well, here's the funny part. Yeah. All the people there, they're starting to get, there's now lists coming out of who was there. So they're all now, I forget that game theory thing, but they're now all looking around each other wondering who called Arrington. So they don't trust each other.
You're right.
This is the funny thing. He has instilled a lack of trust in the most powerful angels. In the most powerful industry in the world. That's funny.
You have to kind of appreciate that. You do have to appreciate that.
You have to appreciate Mike in general. I mean, the guy is very good at what he does. Week in, week out, he comes up with this stuff. 3 days ago, he said Facebook's doing a phone. Equally.
And Facebook denied it, and he said the PR people are on the need not to know list.
This is Mike. For Mike, this is perfect. He says, my sources says Facebook is doing a phone. It makes sense based on Joe Hewitt being there and the Android guy being there. And I love this defense of his story. Yeah, that's what Apple and Google said when I said they were doing a phone. Oh, well, that proves it. but so really what I'm saying is this is the new era of blogger journalism. And for blogger journalism, as opposed to traditional journalism, getting the page views is all that matters.
A little unfair.
Okay.
Not wrong, but not always fair, because I think that it's also what Arrington would say, and he and I use this phrase together, is that in process journalism, you throw it out there and you see what sticks. Now, I'm trained and you're trained to throw in so many caveats, reputedly, I ask them and this and that. He says, screw it, I'll throw it out there. And if it's wrong, as you said before, if it's wrong, I'll correct it. And that's not the standards by which we operated or the New York Times operates. And I think that I would probably, if I were in Arrington's shoes, put in more caveats. Nonetheless, there is a move to process journalism, which is true of Arrington and Denton. It says, throw it out there. See what's right. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know.
So, by the way, Mike, as a result of the Facebook story, got a face-to-face interview with Mark Zuckerberg, who began the interview by apologizing to Mike for the miscommunication. Our folks were trying to reach out to you and weren't able to reach you before we issued our statement. Zuckerberg explains that, well, we're not doing a physical phone. We're looking at making software layers on phones. So.
Wow.
Yeah, but Mike was saying they were going
to
build.
Trying to do.
But I don't know now if Mike's pulling back and saying, oh, okay, so you're not going to make the phone. I don't know. I haven't read the whole thing in great detail.
I got into a screening Monday.
Oh, I'm so excited about this. Amber MacArthur saw it last night and loved it. Everybody who's seen it says it's one of the best films of the year. We're talking about The Social Network, the Facebook movie. Whatever its accuracy.
and Zuck says that it's not accurate, and he's not going to see it.
Well,
apparently.
I wouldn't go if I were him. I might. Well, I guess he hasn't made.
I want to know an entire movie down. About me. I'd
want
to know.
Yeah, wouldn't you want to know what they're saying? But what if they said that, like, they really trashed you as a person? Wouldn't that be painful? And there's really no good way to respond.
Right. Well, right. But at least, I mean, you're going to get asked questions about the movie. At least you have to have answers. You know, you have to have the context. Listen, I'm sure that it would be difficult, like, you know, for your ego to see the movie. But at the same time, the movie is, you know, getting released nationally. This is the impression that people are going to have of you, whether or not it's true.
Right.
I would think that you'd want to know what that impression was so that you could.
Didn't we talk about this last week? The article in All Things Digital? Yeah.
The New Yorker profile, you mean?
Well, there's the New Yorker profile, but then the guy who saw it at All Things Digital, his name escapes me, said, I feel for Zuckerberg because this paints him as a terrible person, and it's the only thing most people are ever going to see. So, yeah. And that's why Mark's doing, you know, that's why Mark's talking to Mike Arrington. That's why Mark's talking to The New Yorker.
Apologizing to Arrington to start?
Yeah, he'll be on Colbert. You're right. Has he done Colbert ever? That would be awkward.
That's the interview I'd want to see.
Awkward.
Oh, boy, is that the train wreck you want to see?
Oh, man. I think they'd spray him with water.
Because I don't think Colbert would know what to do with Zuckerberg. You know, I haven't seen the movie yet, but here's what I want to be on the watch out for. I wonder whether there is a geek bigotry backlash coming.
You mean anti-geek?
That these geeks have taken over the world. And we don't understand them, and they're all weird.
Yeah.
And we're going back to the jocks making fun of the geeks. And that's what I'm afraid of here.
It always goes back to that.
I haven't seen it yet. We'll see.
You know what, Jeff? It always goes back to that, especially in the U.S. I don't know. You're more an expert on international, but in the U.S., we hate intellectuals. We will always hate intellectuals. They'll always have that egghead,
Yes.
And
especially
I think,
when they're billionaires.
Yeah. Yeah, even more.
Yeah.
So if there is even this short period of honeymoon period over geeks, it ain't going to last because eventually people are going to, they're too smart. I don't like smart people. And you're rich and smart. And you're young.
You know, and when I did get the chance to sit down with him for an hour straight on the book, I was kind of looking, and I can't say this, and there's no way I can say this right, so I'll just say it, is that I was looking for popular renditions of Asperger's.
Right.
Right? Is this some kind of
commonly held
character trait?
Yeah, commonly held or common characterization of Mark is that maybe he's got a little Asperger's or something. Maybe he's got some social issues.
And I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the same. It's the same with Eric Schmidt telling a joke. Geeks are different, and we can celebrate that when it's on Big Bang Theory.
Right.
But in real life, we don't know how to deal with it. And the truth is, geeks are in charge now.
Yeah.
We're going to have a geek president. You know, Eric Schmidt or somebody like him is going to be president soon.
Then I'm a little scared. Is he going to wear his ice cream cone suit? Hey, kids. Vote for me. I already know everything about you. Will we have, you know, we did have a geek president. His name was Jimmy Carter, and he was thrown out of office in 4 years.
It was a friggin' disaster. They sent me his book for free, and I gave it immediately to my wife to just give away to the rummage sale. Carter.
How thick is it? Is it really thick?
Oh,
I'm actually dying to read it because it's his diaries. It's his diaries from the White House.
It's just going to make me so mad. He's just such a screw up.
But he was a geek. He was a nuclear engineer. He was an absolute wonk. He was a policy wonk. He was very thoughtful.
You're right.
He was our first geek president. Actually, Thomas Jefferson was our first geek president. In fact, come to think of it.
But Jimmy Carter could not have run a company.
Right. He wasn't an administrator.
Do you think?
No.
No.
I of course, live, breathe, and work with geeks all the time and have come to love them, but I fully understand their social issues. And I think if you are not used to them, they do come off as being something wrong with them. You know, a normal person goes, what's wrong with them?
You are a normal person and a geek.
She's both.
You know, right? I mean, how do you see this relational quandary?
The normal people not understanding the geeks being weird introverts.
Yeah. And is there kind of a geek bigotry, a Greek geek backlash, do you think? Or do you think they're weird?
Are you treated as a geek, Gina? I mean, when you meet people, do they go, you're kind of strange?
Well, no, but that's because I'm not sort of a nerdy looking guy. Like, I don't look like a geek. I don't look like
you don't act like a geek.
But you're also charming. You relate to people.
Yeah,
you look people in the eye. You smile.
You can make the case that you can make the case that everybody in this room is a geek. But yeah, I don't think any of us are that particular antisocial type of geek.
Right. I mean, I think that we all probably share. I mean, I have like a very strong like sense of introversion. Doing the show is hard for me because it's, you know, kind of so public and talking like really drains me. And like I tend toward being very sort of brief and to the point, you know, an email, and I have to kind of force myself to, you know, say, hey, how are you? I mean, kind of go the other way. And this is just kind of how I've decided to deal with it because I realize that it just, you know, when you relate to people, when you greet them kind of, you know, in those ways, those friendly ways, you get a better response. I think that some geeks are so sort of intellectual that it's just hard. They just like, there's not the point, you know, there's no point to that. And I get the impression that Mark is a very terse speaker and doesn't go to do those niceties. That's why I was actually honestly surprised that he opened up that interview with Arrington by apologizing for the miscommunication. That seemed like a very sort of warm thing to do. Even the New Yorker reporter who profiled him said that his communication style is off-putting. He kind of looks off to the side. He speaks in very short sentences. He's not a great interviewer either. I don't think that there's necessarily a backlash going on. I think geeks are actually kind of culturally, like over time, really since the early 80s with Gates, are becoming sort of more accepted. And I think that now you're much more likely to hear high school students identify as geeks and laugh about it. Whereas, you know, back in the day, you would never admit to being one. And that was a bad word, you know. So I don't think it's too bad, although I think with Mark, it's like people say he's 26, he's a billionaire, he's stealing everybody's data, then he's horrible. I mean, I think that's the impression people have of him.
You talked to him, Jeff. Would you say
it becomes a vulnerability?
Is all of that accurate? Is that the Mark that you talked to?
No, it actually isn't. But the thing is, I've watched Mark. I go back to watching him at a Foursquare conference like 3 or 4 years ago, and the interesting thing about him is I loved him at the time because he just gave direct answers. Right. He didn't put any flowers in the bed.
That's why I love engineers. I love engineers.
Exactly. Here is the answer. That's that.
Yeah.
You know, the other example that occurs to me as we're talking about this is how Craig Newmark, in trying to respond to the CNN ambush on him, who didn't call himself, I don't think he called himself Asbury per se.
No, Craig is very geeky.
I can't change subjects.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a friend of Craig's, and I've said this in my blog that he's as hard for me to read as Proust in C++.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a very very bland affect. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's irony there, and you can't tell what's irony and what's real and all that kind of stuff. But he says of himself, his self-awareness is, I have trouble changing subjects. I have trouble relating to people. I have trouble doing this. I have trouble doing that.
This show and this network is the last place I would ever say, you know, oh, you geeks. I mean, that's we're just a bunch of neckbeards that we happen to have shaved today, okay?
That's a new one on me, Leo. That's a new one.
Yeah, so, see, every other day of the week, I look like a complete troll, and I don't say anything more than 2 words a sentence. So. I just transform into, you know, the Twig Princess on Wednesday just for you guys.
So Rotten Tomatoes, this is the chat room just sent me this link to Rotten Tomatoes. It's only 7 reviews so far, 100% on the tomato meter. Only The Godfather and Citizen Kane come close.
I'm going in suspicious. We'll see.
Hey, is there Aaron Sorkin, David Fincher? I have a trailer. We'll end with the new clip that just came out. Actually, it's on Trent Reznor's site because Trent Reznor did the music for this.
Oh man, I got trouble for it. I listened to the music from Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Well, techno doom.
Well, that's Trent. Trent did the music for Quake, or was it Doom? No, Doom, I think. So maybe Doom was like fake 9-inch Nails. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, let's do our tool tip and number of the week, and we will move on because it is getting late, starting with Gina Trapani. You've already done a tip, but do you want to do another one?
Yeah, sure. I've got this is pretty cool. This is actually more of a tool for my Inbox Zero folks, fellows and ladies in arms, the number zero boxer.com, zeroboxer.com. It's pretty cool. It's a Chrome and Firefox extension. You install it and it gives you points and you earn badges for all for the way that you deal with your email. So every time you archive an email, you get a point. If you delete email, you send email.
Make it
it adds this game mechanic to processing your inbox. And then, you know, if your friends are using it, you can see how they're doing. There's this leaderboard. And I just installed it and it's really kind of fun. It makes archiving email and emptying your inbox like really satisfying.
It's easy to do. Uses OAuth. That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And it just adds points kind of across the top. So when you hit that Y to archive an email, you get a point. Very, very satisfying.
Oh, I can't wait. Does it put the points on your Gmail account? I mean, do you see it?
Yeah, you see it across the top of your Gmail account. So,
I see a Chrome or Safari extension. Cool.
Yeah, right. And then you install the extension, and it's just kind of fun. So it's a little extra motivation to empty out that inbox. So I just installed it, and I've only got a few points, but I'm gonna keep doing it.
It is on, Trapani. It is on.
I've always thought that felt like dealing with your inbox is kind of like a game of Tetris. You know, it's just like they keep coming in. You have to clear them away. You know, faster than they come in. And this kind of gives you that same kind of satisfying game mechanic in your email process.
I love this. Oh, I'm so excited.
And thanks to Lifehacker for that tip.
Oh yeah, there it is. So put a little strip up at the top of my.
Yeah,
so I've got
yeah.
0 points, so zero cleared, zero written. Oh, good.
So if you select a couple of emails and archive them, you'll get points.
All right.
So, Gina, could that get leaked? I mean, because if somebody hacked that, you then tell someone, Gina doesn't think you're important.
This is an interesting question because you use OAuth to say ZeroBoxer can have access to my email, and with that always comes the, you know, from I paused and it's like, is ZeroBoxer reading all my email, or are they just detecting when I archive and send? I think they're just detecting when I archive and send. I don't believe that there's no reason why they should be able to detect labels and all that. But hopefully no one will hack ZeroBoxer and see that I don't think they're important. Nothing happens when you mark an email as not important.
I love it. They got badges just like Foursquare.
Yeah, so you get badges. It's kind of a new service. It's kind of beta. They kind of say straight out, you know, there are some bugs, help us out. But it's been kind of fun so far.
But, you know, it's like typical. There's somebody already with 76,000 points.
Of course.
Probably the developer, right?
I think it was the show we had Chris DeBona on, and Chris said, many messages did you have in your all mail? And we had that discussion. Well, I had people on Twitter later saying, well, I've got more mail than Gina has. You know, it really, the geeks definitely do have this, you know, sense of competition about their email inboxes. So I think this is a brilliant idea.
It's totally brilliant. I love it.
It is.
ZeroBoxer.com. Thank you, Gina. Our number of the week for Mr. Jeff Jarvis in Amsterdam.
Thank goodness for the Pew Internet and American Life Project that came in at press time here, telling us that 35% of U.S. adults have software apps on their phones, yet only 24% of adults use those apps. And 11% of cell phone users are not sure whether their phones have apps. Among cell phone users, 29% have downloaded apps to their phones, and 13% have paid for them. So this is the argument about how much has the apps culture taken over life.
Yeah, I
think it's a little bit overblown in the idea that this is just one thing we do, and yeah, fine, I download an app once. And I still want stats on the unused portion of life. Right? How many, as we talked about this last time, how many apps are not updated on their end, on the supply end,
right?
And how many apps have I downloaded that I have never used or haven't used in N months on my end?
I don't want to know that.
That's how many depressing tweets go unread?
Oh,
that's the big stat to me.
That's depressing.
Huge, huge number. And, you know, I guess you can say the same thing about the same calculation. Blog posts aren't read by most people on the earth. That's fine. But you supposedly subscribe to or follow tweets. And I go through, I haven't done it, you know, if I go to my, I've been gone all day going to saunas in Amsterdam, which are very nice, by the way. And, you know, I'm going to end up with 3,000 tweets in my feed that I just then ignore.
Do you think it's possible that there are unread tweets in the world? Like nobody, that a tweet fell in the forest? I guess so, especially if you have 20 followers and I mean.
And they're not good at reading. Absolutely. Sure. Sure.
This is our new platform. When I run for geek president, no tweet left behind.
No tweet left unread.
Yeah.
Look at how depressed we all are at the thought of one of our tweets not getting read. Look, we're such broadcasters. We're like, that's horrible. I can't have my reason for existence. We're just so horrified.
Hey, I got a number for you. Zynga. The folks who do Farmville and all those other Mafia Wars and all those others. Speaking at Oracle's Open World, their CTO offered some interesting stats. Zynga moves 1 petabyte of data every day.
What?
Every day. They add 1,000 new servers every week.
What the hell?
What the hell is right?
So you go back to Clay Shirky's cognitive surplus. Clay, sorry, they're not using it to make Wikipedias. They're doing it to feed fake cows.
It was Gilligan's Island. Now it's Farmville.
Oh, man.
Yeah, boy.
A petabyte a day. That's an unimaginable amount of traffic.
I used to cover conferences in San Francisco. My favorite one to go to was the gift show. Because the only thing that required in that show was that absolutely everything on that floor was useless. Utterly, completely useless.
Wow.
And that's what the thing
is. That's what Farmville is. There is no socially redeeming value whatsoever.
But it's fascinating when you think, like, when a human is given a, like, very clear cutout task, even if it's completely virtual, that's more attractive to do than, like, do crap in life, because life is just messy and sloppy and not as well defined. Yeah. Like, from a productivity standpoint, it's really fascinating.
That's why geeks like it. It's neat. It's tidy.
It is.
It's like cleaning up your desktop.
Yeah.
It's why I think Windows sold so well for so many years, is because it gave you some things you could tweak and stuff, and it gave you stuff to do on your computer. Yeah. And I'm it's probably why Android will do well, too. our tool of the week, and I know you noticed this as well, Gina, Google has announced Google New. So this is the who knew? It's google.com/new products. You go there and you will see all the new things from Google. In fact, there are so many new things from Google that you can select by product to make it easier to find. I wonder if there's anything new in Orkut lately. Why, yes, there is. Why, yes, as a matter of fact. So if you want to keep up with the Googleverse, you can do what we'll be doing every week from now on, visiting Google New at google.com/new products. And now let's end, shall we, with another little clip. This is from Trent Reznor's site, nulico.com. Another trailer from The Social Network, which is coming soon. Gina Trapani is the blogger at smarterware.org. Thank you, Gina.
Thanks for having me. Great show today.
Her Work Smart series is on at Fast Company, fastcompany.com/worksmart.
Yep.
And she'll be here next week if the cupcakes don't kill her.
And sugar shock.
Sugar shock. Jeff Jarvis is in Amsterdam. He's the author of What Would Google Do? A fine book available in better bookstores everywhere. And, of course, he blogs at buzzmachine.com. Thanks, gentlemen and ladies. Lady and gentleman, and we will see you next time on This Week in Google. And now, The Social Network.
Is that a question?
In the 16th email, you raised concerns about the site's functionality. Were you leading them on for 6 weeks?
No.
Then why didn't you raise any of these concerns before?
It's raining.
I'm sorry?
It just started raining.
Squirrels!
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
No.
Do you think I deserve it?
What?
Do you think I deserve your full attention?
I had to swear an oath before we began this deposition, and I don't want to perjure myself, so I have a legal obligation to say no.
Okay, no. You don't think I deserve your attention?
I think if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have a right to give it a try, but there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to people lie. You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the offices of Facebook, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including and especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing. Did I adequately answer your condescending question?